views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
After a disclaimer like that, what can you say?
Nothing.
Wow.
No, I'm not saying anything.
It's going to be used against you in a court of law. I think that's what they said.
That's exactly what they said.
Good grief. And hey, you know what? This show isn't for entertainment purposes, even though he said that. It's for educational purposes, and there's a little entertainment thrown in.
Well, yeah, it's a little different style of education.
What?
Yeah, it's a little different.
I don't know. When I was teaching, I was pretty entertaining.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. Well, don't you learn better when you're laughing? I did. And that's what I thought should be different, which is why I went into teaching in the first place. And then I realized it was just like it was when I was a kid, and then I got out again.
They didn't like you there,
blah,
huh?
Blah, blah, blah.
I understand.
Alrighty. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor.
And then Bill's got this great commercial. Cue Bill in the commercial. Go, Bill.
Our sponsor this week. Our sponsor this week is Team Power, our local Kubota tractor dealer. And Team Power right now is running their service special. So if you've got a tractor you want to bring in, get it serviced and ready for the spring work, go in there and see them, and they'll get you right in. Shop's not too backed up right now, they say, and so you can get in and get out. Also, if you want a new tractor, go in and see them. I think they have a pretty good deal on a used tractor right now, too. Go in and talk to them about that. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller. Or you can get them, well, their phone number is 226-9226, or get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
And if you just want to hang around and talk about tractors endlessly, don't do that because they're really busy.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. No, they love talking
tractors. You need to make a chat room so that they can all go in there and talk to each other.
Oh, you want to talk tractors? Go in this room right here and text me. Yeah, that's how we do that.
Old school.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So,
what are we doing?
Well, you know, okay, before we get derailed and it's 2 o'clock, I was going to just throw out there, we have a huge listenership in France these days.
Yeah, the old Yellow Jackets, I think,
are tuning in. Go make sense of that. They have overtaken the Ukrainians as the out-of-country folks in front. It's like 11% of the listenership in the last 30 days.
So are we driving that Yellow Jacket revolt over there?
We're secretly leading it, yeah.
Oh,
what are you, Chuck Harris?
The Frenchies in their tights are going to come over here and straighten us out.
Exactly.
You better look out.
You better stop it.
Yeah.
Case, because what I was going to say is, if you are involved in all of that and you have folks who would like to talk about it, would you please get a hold of us?
Yeah.
Because I think that'd be a super interesting show. All we see is like just teensy little clips, and you know how our news is. We all know how the news is. We won't even go there. But we'd like to know what's going on. So if you have programs from elsewhere, we're not just doing U.S. stuff.
Yeah. Because I hear the whole Yellow Jacket movement is Donald Trump's fault.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
I know.
He's secretly loading them up.
You know, it's kind of funny, by blaming him for everything, you're actually giving him credit for everything. And I'm not sure they figured
that
out yet.
Yeah.
But I think they will eventually. So I just thought if somebody has something like that, or some topic that we haven't covered, or maybe you didn't think we covered enough, or maybe we screwed around during that show and didn't actually get enough information to you, please reach out to us. Our information is all at wethepeopleradio.us. You've got emails, phone numbers. If you're going to prank call us, though, prank call Bill, because my phone rings a lot. Bill's really doesn't. He can handle the prank calls.
No, mine rings all the time. I just don't answer it. But you're welcome to call me anytime.
All right. So, on with the show. All right. So, you know, most people have heard at least a little bit. We have talked about some voter fraud. There are different kinds of, I guess I'll call it different kinds of voter fraud. Some of it's actually legal. And in California, you know, we make such great decisions in California. It's always, there's always good material for programs. So there was a thing called ballot harvesting that took place in the last election that kept changing the results and led to some fairly funny memes after the fact. There was one that said that they found 11 votes for the Rams in Broward County, 11 points for the Rams in Broward County after the Super Bowl. So, you know, there's been a lot of jokes take off from it. But when you live here, it's not that funny because, you know, we keep getting a dopier and dopier legislature and, you know, some good people get tossed out of office. They're ahead, then magically they're behind. And
the North State just needs to step up their participation rate, too, because, you know, you can't compete with Southern California right now. They're so involved that they have, what, 114% voter registration?
No, 144%,
right? 144%
in Los Angeles County.
Yeah, because they don't mess around down there. They vote early and vote often down there. So
there's a lot of that stuff going on, but California made ballot harvesting legal. And I don't know about you, but I don't really know a lot about ballot harvesting or what that means or how it works. And if you're not looking to do it for nefarious purposes, how do you combat that? And we have 2020 election coming up next year, but it's going to be kind of early. And if you live out here on the West Coast, our primaries are way earlier than normal. So things are going to start gearing up. Well, they are gearing up now, obviously. Everybody and his brother, everybody but my mom and probably Bill's mom, is running for president as a Democrat.
She's considering it.
but we found out she voted for Gary Johnson.
Well,
so
she's probably going to be out of town during that time, so
we're going to have to scribble that out.
She'll have to change her plans.
Aleppo.
What's an Aleppo?
So anyway, you know, everybody's doing this, but we always wait until 2020. You know, we wait till the election year, and then everybody wants to know, what can I do? So we're going to talk about what you can do and how it works today. And we don't have a real strict outline. So if we haven't hit what you like, how about this? We will watch the chat room. We're going to do something new and different. We're going to watch the chat room on the web.
Pay attention.
So if you're listening to us at noonish on February 10th, 2019, just in case we air this later and you make yourself crazy trying to reach out, you can go to the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us. You can click on the chat room feature on the page today and join us. You can fire questions through there, and that'll be the most efficient way to do it.
Well, you know, one thing I'd like to see folks do is try to get some more Democrats to run for president. They don't really have a lot to choose from.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they need more people.
But it did turn out that the Bee Gees were prophets, and they predicted the whole thing that's going on in Virginia. And we've got a couple of good songs for you. So while we're doing all that good stuff, I'd like to introduce our guest, who knows way more than we do.
Does he want us to use his real name? Now that we've...
Because Carlos Danger is already taken.
Yeah,
so
Carlos Danger.
So we'll have to call him Mark Spanagol, because that's actually his name. I know Carlos Danger. Who would do that? Anthony Weiner.
Only Anthony Weiner.
Only Anthony Weiner. Talk about a special case in every short bus sort of way. Wow. Can we still say short bus? That's probably bad, isn't it?
Yeah. I was on the short bus. I resemble that remark.
Do you?
Yeah.
That explains so much. We did a show with Mark, and I was looking, it seemed like not that long ago, but it was January 2016. So I rest my case on my earlier comment that we always wait till the election year to get worried about what we should do, and then it's basically too late. So we thought we'd have Mark give some hot tips, because he's been playing in the campaign field for like 18 years. Is that about right? I had 16 last time, and it was 2 years or 3 years ago.
Yep, 18 years in the campaign field, lots of races.
Yeah, you've done like gubernatorial campaigns, congressional campaigns, city council campaigns.
From very small to very large.
That's cool. And
presidential, it's the full meal deal.
Kind of nice too, and you guys have an impressive track record. So the opponents always hate you, so you're well hated, which is good in your field.
Yeah, that means you're doing a good job.
That's when bad is good.
There's a great Winston Churchill quote about having enemies. Good thing, means you stood for something.
Oh, there you go.
There you are.
Yeah, so all those people who just turned the show off, well, you're going to miss out. Okay, so where do you want to start with all this, or would you like us to take a swift...
probably I'll take a quick break, because we've got a minute.
Break. Let's see. Miss Ashley, I didn't even bring up our music. How about the short version of Carly Simon's Them, one of our favorite songs that should set the tone for us? And then we'll be right back
with
you.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go
Okay, so for those of us following politics, 2020, that would be the theme song. It is very urgent.
Boy, there are some wacko ideas going around right now, and I just...
You wouldn't want to let them get in charge.
Boy, if they get in charge, ooh-wee, we're going to be taking a horse and buggy. Oh, no, you can't have horses because there's too much flatulence there. Yeah. You're going to have to pull your own cart across the country because they won't allow airplanes.
So yeah. Where do you want to start today, Mark?
Well, why don't we start with ballot harvesting. Something new for California. It is another one of those special rules for California. In fact, there's currently lawsuits going as a member of Congress is not seated in North Carolina because there's an allegation that his campaign had done the very same thing that virtually every Democrat campaign did here in California. So this is one of those things that is not uniform across the country. California changed its law kind of quietly in 2016 with a bill called AB 1921, which previously in California, the only way you could drop off a ballot for anybody other than yourself, election day or whatnot, was had to be a family member, had to be signed over to a direct family member that you said, I'm giving my ballot to my wife, or I'm giving my ballot to my mom or my brother. Couldn't be any, had to be a blood relative could turn it in for you. But they changed that and basically said anybody can collect any ballot anywhere at any time. The one exception is you can't get paid per ballot you collect. You can get paid a fixed amount. You can get paid from a political committee, a union, anybody else. You can't get paid per ballot. And we saw this year was the first year it went into effect, and it had a big effect when you look at the results. So when you look at absentee returns for this last election, those start coming out about 30 days before the election. Everybody gets their sample ballots, absentee ballots show up. People start voting. So this kind of went hand in hand with motor voter in California. As you all saw, the DMV registered a whole bunch of people. Sometimes they didn't know they got registered so much. They weren't really interested in being registered to vote, but they ended up being registered to vote.
And their citizenship was determined by them saying checking a yes or no box.
Yes, there was no checking of that.
No verifying any of that.
The state, I think, admitted something about 1,600 folks shouldn't have been registered in the state. You know, the state has said that they didn't vote. There's no, haven't seen any independent look into that yet. I'm sure there will be some, but the state said, oh, no problem here.
Well, how do you know on this harvesting thing, somebody comes knocking on your door and says, hey, I'd love to turn your ballot in for you. How do you know they're not filling it out or turning in an alternate ballot? Do they have access to alternate ballots that they could turn in instead of yours?
So technically, that would violate the law.
Oh, yeah, they never do that, though.
And there's so much supervision.
Who shows up at your door.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
But now they can do that, right, with the harvest ballot harvesting?
That would still be against the law to open a sealed ballot.
Oh, okay.
They're only supposed to turn it in.
They're only supposed to turn in sealed ballots.
You're supposed to, again, but there's a lot of questions about what actually happened. Mm-hmm. Because now you're going to somebody, a lot of the targets for these harvesting were people who are not typically voters.
Mm-hmm.
They're folks who were registered by the DMV, aren't typical, your average voter who's engaged, and somebody shows up and says, hey, I'm here to collect your ballot. Oh, you didn't vote? Great. Sign the envelope and hand it over.
Right. Now, if they get signed up by, say they go to DMV, they get signed up, they don't even know they got signed up, are they automatically going to get an absentee ballot?
There was a lot of pressure on them at the time of signing up. Pretty much the default, I don't know if anybody's done their online voter registration, they ask you multiple times, do you want us to mail you a ballot? It's simple and easy. You don't have to go anywhere.
Right.
There's a big push, and there was also a very big push beginning of last year to get people to switch over, low propensity voters in particular, to being absentee ballots. They were being texted called, particularly declined estate ballots in these target districts, which happened to be mostly in Orange County and the Central Valley. There was a lot of pressure placed on them, almost to the verge of harassment, to get them to sign up to be an absentee voter and to ferret any way that you could put either an anti-Trump spin, an anti-incumbent spin, or just find anything that you were frustrated with besides them harassing you. And through text messages, through phone calls, robocalls, and sending people to your door. It was a very specific and directed program that was used in these districts. And from there, they sent people out, thousands upon thousands. As we saw looking at the returns, the Secretary of State and each county reports how many ballots they get each day and the kind of who voted, you can see. You can actually download, if you're a campaign, okay, I know Aaron voted today. Bill voted today. I'm not going to talk to them anymore. They've already submitted their ballots. So you can kind of get a sense of who's turned in their ballots and who you need to keep talking to. That's all information that the campaigns can get. And what you saw is Republicans were doing pretty good up until about October 30th. And all of a sudden, there was a giant pile of ballots that showed up.
Right.
And the partisanship of those ballots suddenly flipped. We had a very traditional election returns, which means it looks like every other midterm election. And all of a sudden, on October 3rd, the numbers flipped completely. And we went from, you know, in a Republican district in Southern California, 49% Republican ballots, about 32% Democrat ballots. Those numbers flipped so that the overall total, because they turned in such a huge number of ballots in those last days, so that there was a 2% margin for Republicans total after that. And they turned them in so late, they couldn't get verified. That's why that long count, it took so long to count the ballots. There was such a huge volume of ballots that ended up arriving in the waning days of the election that all had to be to go through the verification process. And that's what ended up flipping all of these elections, where the Republican had won on election night.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time they counted all of these harvested ballots, they lost.
Right. Well, there may not, I don't know, the way I look at it with this process is they just hang on to those and see what the numbers are looking like. They may not have to turn them in. But if they're losing, oh, look, we found all these ballots. Let me ask you this. In the past, I was always under the impression that absentee ballots were counted last, and they kind of polled off of the ballots that were cast at the polling places, and then they waited for the absentee. Has that changed? Are they counting the absentees any sooner now?
Well, and so they don't count ballots. They don't open ballots and prep. Well, actually, I take that back. Here's the typical process. Your early absentee ballots, they go through the signature verification process, which is pretty loose. As they use the DMV's data file for your signature, and especially since so many people are registered online these days, it's an electronic signature you did with your finger. It essentially does one scribble on this signature look anything like any
like
other
the other scribble?
Scribble. Anywhere in your signature. Oh, it's good. It's a very loose signature check. And that's all they really do to verify that you are who you say you are with these absentee ballots. They use a banking software, the same kind of software that's supposed to check your signature that when you sign at Rayleigh's, it's the same thing that's on file with the bank.
Okay.
But they get to set the stringency. Like an 80% match, 100%. Most places they use about a 60 or 50% match. Each county sets their own, and then they hand review the ones that get kicked out. So those ballots, if you vote early, say 7 days, 6 days before the elections office actually receives it, they'll do that verification, and those are actually the first ballots that you'll see posted on election night.
But they
those
do count
early absentee.
They count the results in those ballots?
They will prep those So as soon as 8 o'clock hits at election night, they run them through the counter.
Okay.
Okay, so they're like unfolded out of the envelope, that kind of stuff?
They're unfolded, they're stuck in the tray, they're ready to go to be run through the counter.
Okay.
As most places use the whole Scantron, you know, fill in the bubble place, mm-hmm. at least in the North State, they just run those through. So your initial results are your early absentee results. Usually your second group of results that you'll see on election night that kind of come in a little later. Usually first results are 8:15, 8:30. Those are early absentees. Then you'll get your 9:30, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock updates. Those are election day votes, usually ending around 1, 2 in the morning. And then all that stuff that trickles in from, say, 2 days after election up to 30 days after the election are your late absentees, the ballots that were turned in at the election, your provisionals or fail safes, which these are the ones where, hey, yeah, I showed up. I may not live here, but I want to vote here. They'll still give you a ballot and determine if your vote counts later.
Mm-hmm.
Those are provisional ballots.
Or you maybe lost your absentee ballot and had to go to the polls. Do you get a provisional ballot then, or do you get to actually vote?
Right. Then they'll make sure that those are the last ballots counted because they make sure you didn't vote elsewhere.
Right.
Now, has there ever been an election that's been called and then a day or two later when they count all the late absentees, it flipped it?
Well, yeah, like all the ones in Florida.
There were 6 races in California this year that the AP called. Associated Press said, okay, they won. Great example is David Valadao down in the Central Valley. He's from the Hanford area, down by Fresno, Bakersfield area. He was up by about 6,000 votes on election night and ended up losing by a couple hundred votes 30 days later.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I mean, so you had a full 6,000 vote swing.
Yeah, hence the...
Which is a lot of ballots to overcome.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, you know. When we come back... I've had a lot of people say, I don't vote absentee because I don't trust that. But then a lot of people don't trust what goes on at the polls. I don't know that anything is perfect, and it depends a lot on how your county runs things. But I guess maybe we'd like to know from you, if people have a choice, they're going to be around during election day, but they vote absentee just because they have, better to switch back or stay where they were. So let's see. Got a little song for the governor in Virginia. We thought we found 2 songs that the Bee Gees wrote a long time ago that seemed to work. So here's good old Northam's song. Governor has his own song, too.
Nice.
You know what? These are the things I do on Saturday night.
Yeah, bring it on.
I have little Bee Gees epiphanies, and suddenly it sounded like Virginia to me. Huh,
yeah,
go figure.
Yeah. How's it? How do
all
you
right,
do it?
So after that little fun break. All right, so Mark, what do you
We're
think?
Talking about the...
Absentee?
Yeah.
Or in person?
So the most secure way to vote is always in person. However, you know, look, it doesn't always work for people. Voting absentee can work great especially if you want to stop getting called and harassed by campaigns. Any campaign that's calling you after you've already voted for a couple of days is wasting money and time.
I forgot about that part. That's true.
That campaign. So once you vote absentee, they should stop mailing you. They should stop calling you. They should stop showing up at your door. So that's one way if you're tired of those annoying and endless robocalls and now texts that everyone seems to get and send. I know I got two of them yesterday from the state Senate race that's happening in our area. I'm sure a lot of the rest of your listeners did, too.
So the way to get out of that is to send, if you're an absentee voter, is to shoot in that absentee ballot,
that
and then
ballot,
you're out.
Send it, and it's done. And the campaign should, if they're worth their salt, stop calling you and stop bugging you. But as always, the most secure way to vote is to vote at the polls. Once you voted in the poll and you slip that, your vote through that little machine right there, it's counted. And it really is, if there's going to be trickery, if there's going to be something that, you know, at the county level or something else that you're not sure of, that you're worried about, it doesn't matter if you slip it through there or you slip it through an absentee. It's the same basic machine counting it.
Right.
Oh, okay. So if you don't trust the machines, you're getting the machine either way.
You're getting the machine either way.
Okay.
So
you might as well just, you know.
Yeah, if you're going to be around.
One is going through the same machine.
Right. So when you go to a poll, though, you still don't need to show ID when you go to a poll, do you?
Not in California. Numerous states do. That's certainly something that's been looked at. There's been a number of bills in Congress to require voter ID. Unfortunately, while a couple of them didn't move in the House previously, it's one of those things, takes 60 votes in the Senate, didn't move there. So
you go to the poll, you vote, you pull the handle, it's immediately counted, and you're not even supposed to be voting. How's that work?
Great for the other guy.
It does happen. I mean, I think we all have to be real that a voter fraud happens. And it California in particular, it's very easy. I've worked ballot security before. I was in a very tight race. It was a statewide race a couple years back. I got deployed to San Francisco. So you're checking the ballots here. The envelope comes in. These are, again, the late absentees, which is where a lot of things happen.
Right.
Late absentee comes in. The computer comes up. They're verifying the signature. There's a big red bar across. Voter is deceased. First thing that, you know, you raise your objection flag, hey, bring the lawyers, bring everybody, this vote cannot be counted. This person is dead. First thing that worker did, pull it out, shove it through the machine, yes, they voted.
Yeah.
And that's where you're working with the workers are the problem.
Right.
And you can raise every objection. And again, it's one of those, if we were one vote short, that's where the legal challenges happen. We ended up losing by about 1,300 votes.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is that?
So the one vote.
What safeguard is in place for the people that walk in and vote that aren't supposed to vote?
That really depends on which county you're in, how they train their poll workers.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of them. I've been to polling locations around the state, see what happens. Most of them is a very cursory check. It's ask you your name and address.
Right.
And
so if you're not on their list.
With names and addresses posted outside the door.
Right. And if you're not on the list, they're not supposed to let you vote, or do they just add you to the list?
They give you a provisional ballot. So you have to fill out, here's my name, here's my address, here's where I live, here's my phone number. You fill out that information.
Okay.
And they put you in give you a yellow envelope, and you go in a different pile. And then they're supposed to check at the end of the election cycle. And again, they do this. It's not something that's just made up because they just throw them in the regular pile. They check and see, okay, does this person actually live here? Is there any way we can establish that this person actually is who they say they are, live where they say they do? Is that where they're What does their driver's license say? What are the public sources of information say about this person? And did they vote anywhere else? Mm-hmm. Did they get issued an absentee anywhere else in the statewide? Did they show up? Now, counties don't share that information super accurately across counties.
Yeah, that was my next question. How's that?
It's by no means perfect.
Yeah.
It's all centered through the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State's office has been not properly kept for decades.
Right.
I mean, which is why we have the system we have now, where they put folks who shouldn't have been eligible at all to be registered voters on the voter rolls. That's how we get places. Again, closest to us would be Lassen County, where you have 144% of the population registered to vote there. But LA County as well. Lassen County is a little weird because you also have the prison up there.
Mm.
So as the state allows prisoners to vote, felons to vote, that throws off the county eligibility population, because when you look at the county, the people who actually live there, you don't really count the prisoners as people who live there.
But how do they get a ballot if they're a felon?
Through the mail.
Wow. It's exhausting. If it has a prison address, it's like, hello.
Hi, you want to vote?
Well,
think how they're voting on those tough-on-crime measures.
Yeah.
Should we let prisoners out early? Yeah. Should we turn all your felonies into misdemeanors? I don't know.
I know this guy in a cell with me.
Felon, do you like armed people preventing you from hurting them?
Would you like to be able to own a firearm again? Yeah.
Well, forget it. If you're a felon and you're a violent criminal, do you like law-abiding citizens owning guns? Let's see. Gavin Newsom put that on the ballot a couple years ago. Passed overwhelmingly.
No kidding.
Trying to make it harder to own guns.
Yeah, well,
how the prison vote went on that one.
Yeah, because the felons already have their stash.
They're not interested in following the laws anyway.
No. Yeah, if you miss that question, you're an idiot. That's for sure.
Well, tell me this. They had I kind of forgot to tell you ahead of time. I was curious if you knew anything about that court case they had in California where they are going to have to go back and purge the voter rolls. I think it was like 1.5 million voters.
So California typically does not purge elections, which means, so in most states, if you've been inactive for 5 elections, you're removed from the rolls, which means you never returned a ballot in 5 elections, or your mail ballot got returned as undeliverable. In California, we keep delivering you ballots. We keep you on the voter rolls.
Even if you don't vote in the elections?
It's a county-by-county thing. Again, you have great counties and you have terrible counties, depending on what their goal is. Do they want to make sure we have do they want to make fraud possible, or do they want to make fraud hard?
Mm-hmm.
And we have great counties and we have some pretty terrible counties on that. And it is really incumbent. That's why your county registrar of voters is such an important position, at least in the state of California. It has a lot of power.
Right.
The state tries to push on them a lot. But the state of California lost. The Secretary of State didn't want to purge. But federal law does require that eventually you go through and keep those rolls timely, that you remove the dead people. And dead people really shouldn't be voting.
No, it's usually not a good idea.
The Chicago jokes about, Grandpa was a staunch Republican until he died.
Well, is there really much, I mean, I know the answer to this, pressure on the Secretary of State to clean up the rolls? I mean, I guess it depends on, we had a good shot at getting a decent one in this election cycle, but it didn't work. But it really depends on who's in there as to whether or not that's ever going to get cleaned up, right?
Right. I mean, that's, again, where the court comes in. If the court makes them do it, they're going to at least put a half-hearted effort into showing the court that they did.
Right. But if you get the right guy in there, who was it?
Mark Moisher.
Moisher, yeah. Now, he ran on the premise that he was going to clean up the voter rolls, and I guess it didn't really matter. People didn't care about that.
Well, again, the problem Mark's race had is Mark didn't, while he was not able to tell the vast majority of Californians that's what he wanted to do.
True.
Oh, okay.
They never heard of him. They
right.
didn't know who he was. And it's tough when you're a down ballot state running statewide mm-hmm. to get that exposure. Those are some of the toughest races to run because, let's face it, those are the races that most people are the least informed about. Who's yeah. the state treasurer candidate? What does the state treasurer do?
Yeah, I was going to say, most people, when you start talking Secretary of State, they don't even know what that does.
Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, you got some sense. U.S. Senator, the rest of them, state controller. What does the state controller do?
Yeah.
Most people don't know that. They don't know that he's supposed to be the fiscal watchdog of the state. He's supposed to independently audit every area of the state government. Have we had one that's done that?
Oh, yeah. Ours
Not
does
a long
it. Ours is religious about that because they really do a good job.
That's a different
money.
Kind of religious.
Oh. Oh, so they're not
well,
supposed
we
to
have
spend
a lot of
money?
We got a Green New Deal religion. When Nietzsche said God was dead, it didn't mean that they were replacing God. They were just replacing, or it didn't mean God was actually dead. They were just replacing it with the latest government.
Yeah. You will follow that. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Mark Spanagel. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Isn't it a brand new game?
Yeah, it's not for newcomers.
No, it isn't.
No.
Surprise. Okay, so what have we missed in that, Mark? I mean, we kind of blew through the ballot harvesting a little bit. Did we get everything with that?
You know, it's one of these things that's new, and the question is, how do you combat it? Here's the reality: it's legal in this state. It's again. The same reason that the Democrats are suing to prevent the seating of a North Carolina Republican because they allege that he did the same thing is the reason that they gloat that they won in California.
Hmm. So what do you...
And it's illegal in other states, right?
It is. So it's states where it's general... So Colorado has had it for a couple of years. Colorado started... a program in which they mailed every voter a ballot. They have started that in California as a pilot program. Closest places are Nevada County and Sacramento County to us, but they're looking to expand that across the state so that anyone who is registered gets a ballot in the mail, and you no longer have a polling place.
Yeah.
You just have ballot turn-in centers.
Hmm.
Oh, so if they mail them to everybody, it's not like you get a choice. You're automatically registered as an absentee voter then?
Right. You, even if you want to be a poll voter, you are required to be an absentee voter. That's what's currently happening in Nevada County and in Sacramento County.
Okay.
Again, mixed results. The first election they tried it in, they thought it would dramatically increase voter participation. Didn't really. It did in the fall because people were going out to get the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has a ballot.
Yeah, on the face of it, it sounds like a good idea. Everybody gets one, fill them out, and turn them in. It seems pretty simple. Now, if you were, say, you're sitting at home on a Sunday afternoon and you have your ballot, you haven't done it yet, somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, we'd like to pick up your ballot. If you'd like to give it to us, we'll turn it in for you. Totally legal. Well, I haven't filled it out yet. And they say, well,
and I don't know who's good.
And I don't know who's good.
Yeah.
Can you help me with that? Or can you just fill it out? And, you know, I know this guy. I'll vote for him. The rest of them I don't really care about. If that person takes that ballot, totally illegal, how could you report that?
So you're in a real gray area there. So technically, the voter's supposed to have voted it in his or her own hand.
Mm-hmm.
However, how do you know?
Right.
They signed the ballot. They handed it over to somebody they trusted to advise them, which is, again, perfectly legal. If you trust this person to help you vote, you can do that.
Oh, really? So it doesn't have to be a relative. I mean,
doesn't have to be a relative. Doesn't have to be, you know, a political party. It can be anybody.
Yeah.
Lovely.
You can take advice from how to vote from anybody.
Right. But they can't fill it out.
There's no rule, though, when they're doing this ballot harvesting that they, I mean, obviously there's nobody following them, but is there a rule that they're not allowed to write on them?
The Secretary of State, the county's not following them around. There's, what happens at your doorstep, there's really no way to know.
Yeah,
right.
it's like Vegas.
Any way to prove. and we don't, again, for very good reasons, we don't cross-track how somebody voted with who they are. So you can't say, you know, Bob Smith voted this way in this election. And a lot of that goes back to Jim Crow laws. A lot of it goes back to unions and union busting, that employers or unions couldn't hold you accountable for how you voted. That there was no way to connect one individual ballot with one individual voter. In fact, when you're voting, whatever you do, don't write in names of obscure people.
Like Mickey Mouse and all that stuff?
So that's the fastest way to get your vote thrown out and not count. You could think whoever is running for whatever office is the dumbest person in the world, and you say, write in Mickey Mouse. Your entire ballot just got thrown out.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Because
your
ballot now has an identifiable mark. Don't scribble on your ballot. Don't make any mark on your ballot. Don't fill in the bubbles around the names. You know how people do when they're bored in school?
Oh, yeah.
Start filling in the bubbles around, oh, America, I'm going to fill in the A. Bank, I'm going to B. I'm going to fill in whatever.
No crayons.
No crayons, no weird colors.
Yeah.
You got to fill it out straight. Otherwise, the county offices are required to toss them out because then it's an identifiable mark. Somebody could hold you accountable. You could have been instructed to do that. They have to be uniform and unmarked. And, you know, I can't vote for my next door neighbor for president. Can't happen. If they're not a registered write-in candidate, don't write them in.
Okay. And then a lot of times people will, they'll skip the people that they don't want to vote for. But I know in some states, one of the choices is none of the above.
Nevada has that.
That seems kind of like a good idea.
Sure, it is. It usually doesn't mean anything.
No, but people like to. I mean, if they really don't, because
you can send a message.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's like a protest
vote. None of these people were acceptable. Kind of like voting present.
Right. Because
we've had certain presidential people.
Yeah, here we wind up with two people from the same party a lot of times. And so people will say, well, I don't like either of them. I didn't even have a choice that was, you know, ideologically going my way a little bit. And
best advice on that is just skip it.
Yeah.
Those states, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't like either of them, skip the ballot. Because we know who skips the ballot. There's a track at every county. It's called an undervote. You didn't vote for enough people.
Oh, okay.
Let's say, you know, it could be for Reading mayor. I only want to vote for one person. Fill in the one person. For Reading City Council or for...
Right, like you can vote for up to three, and there's like four candidates, but you only like two of them.
Vote for two.
Mm-hmm. And your ballot is still good. You vote for two. I mean, you're still being counted.
You're still being, the problem becomes where it's vote for three and you vote for four.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in that case, they just don't count your ballot for that race. It's an overvote. They nullify that, and you don't. There's no votes counted in that race, but the rest of your ballot is still good.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But when you look at the voter statistics, every county, every race, there's a undervote, overvote statistic, and that's one of those ways that you can register, hey, I'm not happy with either of these candidates. I'm just not voting in this race.
Okay. So, yeah, because somebody had just called, apparently, while we were having this discussion and wanted to know what happens when you don't mark either candidate. So it's better to not mark anybody than to do some obscure weirdo write-in, because then the rest of your ballot chucks you out.
Right. You could have really cared about one thing. You know, let's say, okay, we're going into 2020. The only thing you really care about is you get Donald Trump back. Okay, you're going to the polls. You don't know who you're voting for county supervisor or for, we won't have state offices on the next ballot or, you know, whatever next version of Prop 1 is. You have no idea what that is. But if you write in something for county supervisor where you got to write in or city council or whatever it is, your whole ballot disappears. It no longer counts.
Right. That's good information.
It's not unless that's, again, a registered write in. Where somebody runs, goes down, files the paperwork, and runs a write-in campaign.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we have you hostage for the second hour, so we'll have a whole new set of questions. If people want to ask questions, it'd be really easy if you could either give us a call, 530-605-4567. Ashley can keep track of that. Or shoot us a message on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local Kubota tractor dealer up on Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Go up there if you want to get a great deal on a tractor. You want service work done, parts. They do it all up there. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. And phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com. But yeah, now's the time to go up there and get your machine serviced up and get it ready to go
you
for the spring.
You guys do consignments, new
all
ones.
All kinds of things. If it has anything to do with a tractor, they
ATVs.
Do it. Oh, yeah, they do it all.
There's all sorts of stuff. Yeah. It's right there on the highway. It's so easy. Besides, orange tractors are awesome. So
yeah, go up and get one. Bring it home and play with it.
You should have an orange tractor.
Yeah.
It's not a good clothing choice usually, but it's really good on a tractor.
Yeah. It's good on a parking garage attendant, too. But, you know, other than that.
Oh, we saw the Temptations once at a Kubota conference. They had to wear orange.
Yeah.
Kind of looked like they escaped from jail.
Looked like they just got out of jail.
That was not good.
No. Not a good choice.
But I appreciate them trying to play along. Yeah. So we're here with our guest, Mark Spanigal, and we've been talking about election stuff. We thought we'd get a little jump on 2020, and maybe this hour we could look a little bit into what people can do, because that's the biggest problem. People don't know much about campaigns. They seem sort of annoying. Well, let's see. People either figure they're annoying or they're scary or they're all corrupt, or you know, whatever.
No, they,
whatever
you
thing
know,
people have decided.
People think California, your vote doesn't count
and it doesn't
anymore,
matter,
so
and all that good
they
stuff.
Don't have anything to do with it.
But campaigns are a great way to learn about candidates. Volunteering for a campaign is, I mean, bar none, best way to find out who's running for office. And it's a great way to find out how that process works. There are easy things you can do. You don't have to be an expert or anything. And I kind of like to get into a little bit of, we're going to start seeing these conventions. And I don't know, for years when the conventions would come on, it would always pop up in my head, like, where did those people come from? Like, how do you get to be at the convention?
Yeah. The delegates, you mean?
Yeah. Who gets to go to this? Is this like an invite-only deal?
Yeah.
What's going on with
show
this
up
convention
and give
business?
You a sign and tell you where to
and
stand.
I think a lot of times people don't watch and don't get involved because they have no idea how it works. And I don't know what we did in eighth grade. I think that was when we did government. But if you didn't do much...
Sutter's Fort.
Oh, you were going to say. We were doing Revolutionary War.
It's a little bit like Sutter's Fort. If you want to be a delegate, there's an application process. It's done. So...
Yeah, how does all that go together?
So, activism and being a delegate kind of go hand in glove. To be a delegate for one of these conventions, essentially got to be noticed for doing something on an election. But oftentimes, these are considered rewards for folks who do things to help the campaign. To be a delegate to one of the major party conventions. They have, the full delegate, which is person down on the floor, and then they have, associate delegates, and those are the people that are up in the stand, filling, they're ready to go down. And if somebody that can't serve their duty, usually there's three associates for every one of the official delegates. And those are selected by the actual campaign. So whoever wins. And so in this case, we've got Donald Trump running for re-election. The Trump campaign is likely to be the Republican nominee. I don't see anybody else even particularly challenging him with any credibility. He's going to be the Republican nominee. So his campaign selects, based in every single congressional district in the country, a slate of regular and associate delegates.
And where do they get those names? Because they don't personally show up and appoint people.
So they get them through the campaign structure.
Okay.
Folks who have volunteered for the president's reelect, through close allies, through the California delegation or the Nevada delegation, congressional delegation. The state party recommends some people to them. So essentially the folks who show up and walk the precincts and make the phone calls and do the work, they get recognized for their effort and say, hey, would you like to go? Which is a little bit different, but closely related to the way we actually elect people for president in this country, which is through the Electoral College, which, again, is a genius system. If you want to be the elector, each party selects their electors. Each campaign, in last case, the Clinton campaign and the Trump campaign, they said, okay, this person's loyal to me. I'm going to select them. Again, in different states, different rules. Some states, the state selects the electors. In California, the campaign selects the electors, and they each submit a list to say, all right, here's my 53 people from, or 55 people from California, from the Trump campaign, and here's my 55 people from the Clinton campaign. And depending on who wins, that one or the other group of electors goes to Washington, D.C. to cast the vote for president. And 270 wins.
Nice. And then, okay, at the state level, when you have a state convention, how do people wind up being part of that?
So the two different parties, and again, they're the two major parties, have different rules. Republicans, you're either appointed by your central committee, which is, I mean, sounds very communistic, but your local party, your local Republican party, your Shasta County, Tama County, Los Angeles County, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, every county has a Republican party that's actually an elected official position. every 4 years, so coming up in 2020, it's open to any Republican. You can run to be on your local party ballot, your local central committee, and whoever gets the most votes wins. And you, as an elected representative, they each body then, each county, selects based on the number of Republicans you have there and how active you've been. You get bonus delegates. Did you walk precincts? Do you have a plan to connect with every voter? Did you elect more Republicans than Democrats in your county? Do you have more Republicans in your county than Democrats? You get extra people. And then you, each of those counties sends somebody. So every county's got a delegation to the state party. Democrats do a little differently. It's elected based on activism. They get a local convention together for each assembly district, and then they vote based on who knows who. And they have different categories. They have, which I don't know how they still do in the Democrat Party, but they have males and females. Actually, it's females and non-females that they elect. And then they have other different categories that they have to meet a rubric of a certain quota of females, a certain quota of non-females, a certain quota of your other alphabet soup. And those folks all get a delegate. And in order to get endorsement in the Democrat Party, you have to get a certain number of your kind of alphabet soup groups of people.
Okay.
The Republican Party, it's just, you know, straight majority wins.
So how do you become part of a central committee, and why don't we ever hear about them?
One, it's probably one of those down ballot races that nobody really pays attention to. Oftentimes, not even enough people file for the election that it even goes to the ballot. Most of the time, it's just, you know, three or four people put their name on the line, and it's five people in the election, so those four people are automatically in.
Mm.
But when election time comes around, it should be about November, December, candidate filing will open. We have a March primary next year, and as a presidential primary, that's the only time we will have a partisan ticket ballot. That only Republicans can vote for the Republican presidential ballot. Therefore, Republicans can be on the ballot to run for Republican Central Committee, because we don't have those partisan primaries anymore. It used to be every 2 years. Now it's every four. And that kind of makes it an official thing. And your local party, like the Shasta County Party, I think gets six, plus their chairman and treasurer automatically. Appointments to the local party. The only other place to get an appointment is from your nominee for Assembly, Senate, or Congress. Each one, depending again if they won or not, gets up to 10 slots to fill.
Oh.
And then those folks get to go to conventions. Republicans have three over a two-year cycle that rotate between Northern California and Southern California. But again, they consider Northern California Sacramento,
Monterey,
or San Francisco, pretty much, or San Jose, and Southern California is pretty much anything south of Bakersfield.
So are all states, you know, some form or fashion of this, or are we doing it weird again?
No, we're not. Different states, different rules. Again, that's kind of the joy of the Constitution. Each state gets to experiment, do it whichever they want. Texas does a similar fashion for Republicans, that their central committees get a larger section of their state, their local parties get a large section of appointments, and then their elected officials get a large section of appointments.
Interesting. So if you don't like the way your state's going, not being involved is a sure way to make sure that continues. As usual, doing nothing is never the great choice to affect change. We have to take a really quick break here, and we'll come right back with our guest, Mark Spanagel. We're talking about elections and things related to elections. And if you would like to ask a question, you can give us a call at 530-605-4567, and Ashley will take that down, or you can shoot us something on the web. We are at wethepeopleradio.us. We have a chat room open all through the show. So we'll be right back.
Oh, it's not time. day now. Never meaning what they say now. Never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da.
And here we go. We are back with our guest, Mark Spanagle. We're chatting about elections.
Yeah.
It's a big subject. Okay, so we're early, but we're not that early.
So, we're really not that early when it comes to the next election cycle. Mostly, again, it depends where you are, different states, different things. California is going to be much earlier next year, which should have some interesting effects on the presidential race. As California seems to go for the most left-leaning candidates possible, what does that mean? We're not going to be in June like we normally are. It's well after the nominees are decided. We're going to be that's a week in March. And that means you've pretty much had New Hampshire, February, a couple of small states. We're going to be lumped in with Super Tuesday. It's going to be a big
yeah.
change. And we have the largest pot of delegates available of any state, especially for the Democrat side. We have a chance. I mean, the Democratic side of the aisle, California will set likely who will be the nominee for the Democrats. Could be Elizabeth Warren and that version of crazy. it's all going to be some version of crazy, let's face it. It seems to have come out, but California is not going to pick a centrist Democrat. That's just not who we are. We have Governor Gavin Newsom. There's nothing centrist about that.
Nothing good happens there.
Nothing. But I mean, we have our own United States Senator, Kamala Harris, running, and by no means a centrist either. But also, according to recent polls in the state of California, by no means a heavy favorite in the state either.
No, and the funny part is there's a big question mark on whether or not she's even eligible to run. I keep seeing that.
I haven't seen that one too much. I mean, the eligibility to run for president is pretty low bar.
But, I mean, her parents weren't actually naturalized citizens in the time frame that the Constitution requires. But, you know, we did have that whole Obama thing, so who knows? Maybe we just don't worry. Maybe we don't worry about that now.
I think spending time worrying about that one, if
yeah.
she was born in the United States, which she clearly was,
yeah, then that'll be a
she's
going to
qualify. I mean, you have the same question. I mean, again, John McCain was born technically overseas because his father was serving overseas at the time. There was never any question there. That's one of those sideshows that gets us going down the road rather than attacking the reality of, her ideology is dangerous to the country.
Yeah.
I mean, some of that focus there would move us a lot farther to keep not having her as president.
So how much do you see, I don't know how I want to even ask it, but, I mean, people do get derailed into that stuff. So when that all starts happening, people are not making phone calls. I don't know that people understand most voters out there, I'm not sure they understand how much of a difference walking precincts and making phone calls actually does. I'm not even sure what percentage of the population's even done those things. I think it's pretty small.
Unfortunately,
right?
we have a much less participatory democracy at this time. I mean, that's, again, the one day of the republic that we are a democracy is election day. The rest of the time, we're a representational republic. We don't directly vote on those issues. We send one of our peers from where we live to vote on these issues and make these decisions. The one day we're a democracy is election day. Indirect democracy has a lot of benefits. And so getting folks to vote and educate them is a huge thing. Getting out, walking those doors, telling your neighbors, and it doesn't have to be scary. It can be your neighborhood, your neighbors. You don't have to, if folks took the time to talk to their neighbors about the issues that matter to them and why they think one candidate is better than another, even about just the issues, it gets them engaged. Because so many of our people, it's so easy in society now to never deal with these things. I think, you know, a lot of us that spend a lot of time in this area get this notion, oh, everybody knows that. Everybody knows those facts. Everybody knows what's going on, what's happening in Washington, what's happening in Sacramento, what's happening at City Hall. But the reality is, in today's day and age, we create silos. And people generally live happily in their silo. They don't have to confront any uncomfortable and unhappy thing that's happening in Sacramento until it actually happens to them.
Yeah, very few people keep track of local issues, state issues, even a lot of federal issues. I mean, they follow the president, you know, and they're going to vote.
Yeah, they might see it on the
version. Which version of the president are they following?
Well, that's about the only thing they really, really, you know, they say, well, I voted. Well, really, who'd you vote for judges? And who'd you vote for state? They couldn't tell you. You're right. I mean, most people, and I talk to a lot of people on politics, they're very uninformed. Very uninformed because they, you know, their life is moving on and they don't, you know, unless you're a political hack that just lives and breathes politics, it just seems like people just don't take the time to really concern themselves with day-to-day politics. Like some of us do.
You guys hit the nail right on the head there.
Get Bill a cookie.
As you have, I mean, let's face it, whether you look at your Facebook feed or you look at what you're watching on Netflix, I mean, it's easy to tune out the rest of that stuff because a lot of it's screaming.
Yes.
And it's not interesting.
Right.
And who knows who's telling the truth anymore?
Right. Well, I hear a lot of that. So, people are like, "Well, I don't listen to the news anymore because they're all liars, so I don't listen to any of it." Well, you're kind of cutting yourself out of the herd there when you don't pay attention to what's going on.
Well, you selectively decided that you no longer have the ability to tell what the truth is.
Exactly. And consequently, you might not vote.
Well, then you become, the less you know, the more easily you are swayed by those other peer pressures,
mm-hmm.
by
sure.
seeing that one fake news article that changes your whole opinion of somebody,
right.
because you didn't bother to understand anything else that was going on, and now there's the one crazy news article.
Well, the other thing, too, is people don't, I think a lot of times, they shy away from campaign, we'll call it campaign work. Even if they're volunteering, they're thinking, well, I can't make calls to voters because I can't answer every question.
I mean, that's one of the biggest fallacies. Because most folks don't have a lot of questions.
Right.
And if they do, there's also usually somebody there right next to you that has those answers or can give them to you or can help walk you through. The thing with working in the campaign is at the end, you end up knowing a lot more stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know a lot more about a lot more issues than you thought you did when you start. And a lot of times they end up becoming things that are really interesting.
Well, you get to see the.
You didn't even have an idea existed before. Why would we be debating that?
Mm-hmm.
These issues come up in campaigns all the time.
And campaigns at all levels. And a lot of times, I know that campaigns you've worked on, a lot of times are kind of mixed. You know, you'll have like a congressional candidate and then maybe city council candidate or candidates and maybe a board of supervisors, and they all sort of band together and we'll do like a little election headquarters together.
Right. I mean, you get folks that, oh, well, I support this person but not that person. And you get some of that, but a lot of times it's, you know, pretty like-minded folks. You get an assembly member in a congressional race and they throw in together and they say, all right, we're gonna go get everybody to the polls to vote. And, they're trying to get the folks they determine are most likely to vote for them to the polls. Because that really becomes, whether we talk about back to ballot harvesting or we talk about, it's all part of the same thing. Those who show up make the decisions.
Right. Do you find that most people are like single issue voters? He's for abortion or he's,
There's a big chunk of that. I mean, it's not... And it's a lot of individual issues. There's a lot of folks, how are you on guns? If you're good on guns, I'm good. If you're good on abortion, I'm good. And the same on the left. Are you good on, do you want to outlaw the internal combustion engine? Great, I'm good.
Right.
We heard that this week. There's a market for that.
Yeah, there really is, which is surprising.
They don't understand economics.
Trust me, they were selling.
Candidate for that.
They were selling suckers. I should take a picture of it and put it on the website for today. They were selling suckers at the grocery store last night called unicorn poop. They were rainbow color. I thought, it's getting worse.
And somebody's going to believe it.
I know. Yeah. I bought three of them, so somebody's going to get them. I don't know who, but I couldn't stand it. It's like, that's a good use of 95 cents. But, I mean, a lot of this stuff is... You would think it was crazy, but it's becoming, it's all too prevalent. We're spending a lot of time talking about socialism.
We are. Well, look, it's a function of an education system that lacks historical context for things, that don't understand the history of socialism. The idea is, look, if the government controls everything, you are not free any longer.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand that, especially young people. Miss that because they miss seeing the realities of what communist Russia was.
Right.
The totalitarianism that still exists in China. You can't have certain opinions. You can't do certain things or you get disappeared. It still occurs in China.
And we've done several shows about how you get your organs harvested from people who came here from China. So... yeah, there's a lot of info on that sort of thing. I'll post those with today's show. We're going to be right back. Got a couple minute salute to capitalism, and we'll be right back. A little shout out for all the Democratic candidates that are.
you went off the rails a long time ago.
every one of them that announces, I hear that song in the back of my head. It's not good. Not good at all.
You're a candidate for what?
Going off the rails.
I'm like, again?
Yeah.
Crazy people. So, in order to combat that, I mean, the danger, and, you know, you're the expert, Mark, but. I mean, looking at it, the danger is people will say, oh, for heaven's sakes, nobody's going to vote for these idiots.
Yeah.
And so they kind of either don't vote or they don't help.
Well, there's a market for every brand of crazy.
but capitalism's all about
that with it. When you don't show up to vote, you are making a choice to give your power to someone else. Someone else is making that choice for you.
Yeah, and I truly believe if you're not voting, then you really don't get to say how much you don't like it.
But the bottom line is you're not helping.
No,
I mean, you're actually hurting.
This goes back to that ballot harvesting question. How do you combat ballot harvesting? Inform, engage, so that you're not the uninformed voter, so that you get that ballot harvesting. Again, you're moving small margins of numbers. Sometimes, could be as many as a couple thousand votes in a congressional district, which is 740,000 people per congressional district. So you might move a couple thousand votes. But if folks are engaged and they know what's going on and they're voting, especially some of these marginal districts that are down the Central Valley where people just don't vote, we're 25,000, 30,000 votes. Central L.A., a winner of an election gets 25,000 votes. Winner of an election here in the North State, again, the district with the same amount of people, gets 180,000 votes.
Wow.
Is there an average number or an average percentage that you can count on in any given district for the amount of people that actually vote in that district? I mean, I heard it was like 20.
Where they are.
Okay.
I mean, you have to do an analysis of every district separately. So, again, here where we are in the northern part of California, we have very active and participatory democracy. People show up and vote. You have lots of counties, especially the smaller ones, tend to be a little older. They'll regularly hit 70, 80, 85% voter turnout.
Wow.
Of those registered to vote. You have places in L.A. where you're talking 15, 20% turnout.
Hmm.
Really miserable turnout.
Right. And those are the people that are steering the ship down there. Is that little 20% of the population, and the rest of them are watching?
Well, when you look at some of these districts where it's a 70-30 race, and the difference between 70 and 30 is 3,000, 4,000 votes.
Right.
Wow.
In a congressional district.
Yeah, that's not much.
I mean, this comes back to activism. That's purely going around your neighborhood. Meaning, again, some of those neighborhoods are not the nicest neighborhoods. But that's change is not really that hard in that neck of the woods. It just takes some activism.
Mm-hmm.
When nobody votes, getting another 5,000-6,000 people to vote changes the entire complexion of the election.
Jeez. And so I'll never forget it. When I was first getting involved in this kind of stuff and I went down to walk precincts out of the area, and the guy, he was giving us all the literature and the list, go to the, these are the houses you go to, leave this literature, at these places. It's like, okay. I had never done that before. And he said, no, this is like the fourth time or something that you're going to be going to these, that you'll be at these houses. And I'm thinking, oh my God, these people are going to kill us. Like, they're going to be super pissed off. I said, well, why are we going there four times? And he said, because you have to contact a voter, I think he said seven times.
Seven times.
Yeah, that was like the magic number.
Seven times at the door is the magic number that science tells us. Through the magic of statistics, that somebody who does not typically vote will more than 50% of the time turn in their ballot if you show up at their door seven times.
But see, like, wow. Now someone like me who had never done this before, my first thought was, if you show up at my door seven times, I'm not voting for you. And he said, statistically, that's inaccurate. The more times
right.
they hear your candidate's
you're going to lose some. But again, if you show up with a smile.
Yeah.
And you show up with a little humility that, hey, I know we bugged you a few times. We really want to make sure your vote really matters. It actually matters. It will make the difference in this race. We believe the same thing you believe. You're more likely to get their vote than not. And if you show up seven times, your that person is more likely than not to show up and vote.
Well, in California, you stand a pretty good chance of them handing over their ballot. You can fill it out yourself.
And then there's that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, again, but the way to combat that is be informed, don't turn over your ballot, and get other people engaged.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the number one. The more people that are engaged in the process, the less likely you're going to go, hey, some weird guy in a funky T-shirt I've never seen and a fake badge showed up to my door and said, give me your ballot.
Right.
See, and now that the ballot harvesting in the places where that is actually legal, you can very easily turn that into a legitimate, proactive campaign technique, I would imagine. Even if you're not specifically involved with a campaign, if you and some friends just really want to get things done, good to work with a real campaign. But if you just went around your neighborhood and said, hey, we're happy to drop your ballot off at the city hall.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be much more effective working with a campaign.
Because exactly.
Let's face it, some data that goes behind it. Because unfortunately, and Aaron and Bill, you know, you've walked precincts. When you're not going to every door.
Right.
No.
Right.
You're going to about 1 in 6 doors or 1 in 8 doors in a particular neighborhood because those are the people, one group of people you're hitting on the phones because they vote every time. They don't really need to be reminded to vote. They're going to vote every election whether you show up or not. You're just reminding them to vote for your candidate. Another group of people isn't registered to vote, will never be registered to vote, probably is ineligible to vote. You're not stopping at their doors because they're not relevant to our conversation today. They are the truly inactive people who are in their silo and doing something else in life. And then you got the folks who are registered but don't show up very often. That's who you're really going after.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's where working for a campaign is so much more effective. I mean, these guys...
Your time is much better spent.
Exactly. These local guys that run their own campaigns and don't have access to that kind of information are just knocking on every door. Tremendous waste of time.
Well, handing out literature to everyone and his brother.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's very
really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
When we come back, let's talk about the expense, because you had told me those numbers once before. I don't have them in front of me, but what it costs to run races. People want to get campaign finance out. Let's do a little blurb on that when we return. We're here with our Yeah, that would be good for folks to know. We're here with our guest, Mark Spanigle. We're talking about elections, specifically gearing up for 2020. Be right back.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Moment like this, I can't help but wonder, what would Jimmy Buffett do?
Funny you should ask, Alan.
I'd say, pull me something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care. Pour me something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care.
He don't care.
I don't care.
It's 5:00 somewhere.
Mostly on the East Coast.
Well, I don't know. Speak for yourself.
In honor of a hard-fought campaign, you know, 5:00 does come. So what's the cost of all this? Because people complain all the time, well, we need to get the money out of politics. That's a nice idea, but these things don't pay for themselves.
Well it is, but, I mean, you're going to have to change at least the way the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution, since Buckley v. Vallejo, that me as an individual, I can spend money to elect somebody I want because that's the way I influence people. And there's been various attempts. Again, I can give you my personal opinion, which is, hey, just immediate disclosure. If somebody wants to give money, just make sure everybody knows about it so that you can't hide it. and there's no dark money or any of this other stuff. Hey, just disclose. Immediate disclosure, 48-hour disclosure, anything over 100 or 1,000 bucks, whatever. Just make it clear. But the way, and I'll speak to federal campaigns because that's where everybody's really talking about these days. There is not a lot of this thing called dark money going out. I know there was a discussion in D.C. There might have been press out there. Oh, corporations can give this money. Look, corporations can't give money to federal candidates. It's illegal. It's been illegal since 2000. Their employees can, but their employees are just no different than any other employee. Their corporation cannot reimburse them. That's a felony. Hmm. They go to jail. There's
so the get corporate money out of elections is just a lie because it isn't actually happening.
Now, what about lobbyists?
So, lobbyists different. Work for, so the when you hear about PAC dollars, mm-hmm. here's what PAC dollars are. The employees of fill-in-the-blank corporation say, hey, what my business does is important, and I don't want you to regulate it or whatever, and they give money to their PAC. There are still limits on that. The limit is for PAC contributions is $5,000, is what any one person can give to that PAC. And then that PAC can give up to $5,000 to any one person. They can't give more than that, $5,000.
And just to decode for people, PAC stands for Political Action Campaign.
So any particular any individual can only give $1,000?
Right. Is that what any individual can give $2,800 per person per cycle for a total of $5,600.
Directly to a candidate's campaign?
Directly to a candidate, but that has to be from an individual. It can't come from a business, can't come from a corporation. Candidates cannot accept corporate checks.
Okay.
And when you see a PAC, the PAC can't accept corporate checks either. Those checks are from the employees of that company.
And that PAC is limited.
And that PAC is limited as well. It can only accept $5,000. It can only give $5,000. I mean, it can give less. It can give $100. It can give 25 cents. But the maximum they can give is $5,000 per cycle.
Right. And there's no limit to how many PACs there are out there.
There's no limit to how many PACs. But there's been, now, the other thing you've got out there, because there's these limits, you now have these 527s, the independent expenditure committees, which basically says, well, because I can't support you, I'm going to spend money directly. That's what changed under Citizens United. And it basically says that a group of people or an individual can spend any money they want supporting somebody as long as they don't coordinate in any way with the campaign. And again, there's really strict laws that prevent them from coordinating, and nobody wants to get caught doing that because then you go to prison, and nobody really wants to go to prison.
Provided you actually go. So a lot of that.
They send people. The fines are hefty. The fines are hefty. The prison time is pretty real. People get in trouble for that when they've done it, and it's pretty easy to catch you.
And so I'm an individual, and I really like this guy who's running for president, and I want to give him $10,000. I can do it under those rules?
You could do it under these rules. You could give directly. Presidents, and I got to remember, I think presidents are also $2,800. You could give them $5,400. Husband and wife could combine together. There's your $10,000.
Okay.
If you wanted to go above that, you could give it to the party. You could give it to the RNC to support the president.
Okay.
Again, that's what the RNC's job, the Republican National Committee, is to help elect the president. And they have much higher threshold. I think there's $100,000.
Right. So there's where you could give your large amount of money is to the party, and then the party will distribute the funds how they see fit to get their candidate elected.
They can't distribute. They spend directly.
Oh, okay. Right.
So that money that goes to the RNC can't be given to Donald Trump or It has to be spent on behalf of Donald Trump, but it can't be given to him.
So they can buy commercial time, they can buy newspaper ads, right, that sort of thing. But they can't give it direct to the candidate.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense.
It does make sense.
That's where the big money comes from.
Well,
that's where the big money comes from, or these kind of other groups. Again, they're required to disclose. You know, the FEC does a pretty good job of making sure that they do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, citizens for whatever, they want to spend money on a race. They can band together. They just can't ever talk to the candidate. They can't talk to their consultants. They can't share things. They have to do their own thing, and they can.
Well, that's where you hear it costs, you know, millions of dollars to run for president. That's where it comes from.
A lot of people support.
Yeah.
I think the Trump campaign spent $900 million. The Hillary campaign spent well over a billion and a half.
That's just amazing.
Those are ballpark figures. I don't have those at my fingertips. I can tell you, you know, again, for backing up to local level, California, you know, if you're going to run for Reading City Council, it's probably between $30,000 and $50,000. If you're going to run for State Assembly, probably about $400,000. You're going to run for State Senate. We have a special election for the State Senate. Probably in a contested state senate race, $1 million each side.
Dang.
House race, anywhere from the average nationwide for a state house seat, about $980,000. The average for a contested house seat is now up to like $3 million on each side.
Wow.
We had one of the most expensive house races in California history. They spent more than most small states spend on a governorship for a house race in California. Spent $25 million each side, so a total of $50 million in a house race this last year.
So if you really want to be a viable candidate for running any state seat, you've got to have your party behind you.
Well, and so in most states, the party doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better have some serious fundraising skills.
The party doesn't do any fundraising for you. It doesn't help you at all.
No, but people can give to the party.
Most seats are safe Republican or safe Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're competing against another Republican or another Democrat.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so the party doesn't get involved in those things, either Republicans or Democrats. You've got to figure that out on your own.
Right.
So
it's the small portion of seats that can go either way where all the money is spent.
And so money is, I would think, the most effective use. If you were just going to, you know, if you had $100 that you wanted to contribute to a candidate you like, would be to go directly to their campaign.
Absolutely. Well, one, it's the most cost-effective.
Right. It allows them to spend it wisely and specifically and not...
They spend it wise. The other thing is all those other people that aren't the candidates pay more for everything. The cost of their mail costs more. The cost of their TV ad can be as much as four times as expensive as the candidate ad, you see. Candidates get reduced prices because they have limits.
Right.
Because they have these limits, the TV stations and the radio stations give them what's called lowest unit rate, which means they pay less, but they pay for it directly.
And
if an outside group comes in, they may pay four times, five times more. They have to pay the highest unit rate.
So
that's one of those ways when you talk about $25 million aside, that's when you're talking that all that outside spending including, that's they're paying those super inflated ad rates. The TV stations love campaign season. They make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Dang.
Absolutely. Most media outlets love campaigns.
Well, I know that there's a lot we didn't cover, so actually, I would really appreciate it if people would email shoot us an email if you'd like to hear more on this topic and what specifically you'd like us to cover, because we've got time before 2020. We will do this again. Thanks, Mark, for all of your expertise and your time.
Thank you, Mark.
And now it can be 5 o'clock somewhere at your house.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So for those of you who would like to send this to somebody else, we'll have it archived and in the hopper for you here this afternoon. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week. A green belt wrapped around our minds, an endless red tape to keep the truth confined.